everybody, and welcome once again to the Only Movie Podcast. It's me again, as always, every week, week in and week out, Dan Leo. And again, with me as always,
it's Robert Meckie. I'm stuck here forever with Dan. We both signed a blood contract.
Right? And that guy, he was so convincing. And that keychain wasn't worth it, though.
He had such a cool hat, I couldn't say no.
Yeah, a nice mustache, waxed.
Oh, our bits are on point tonight.
Definitely. All right. Well, in this episode, we're going to be talking about the NBA drama from Steven Soderbergh on Netflix as we speak. Shot on an iPhone 8, High Flying Bird. More on that later. But right now, we are going to do what we usually do. Go through the box office real quick. Nothing really surprising here. Everyone's just waiting for Captain Marvel next week. Yeah. How to Train Your Dragon came in first with $30 million, bringing its total gross up to $97 million. The crowd goes wild.
I'm just glad it beat Tyler Perry's A Madea Family Funeral, which came in second place at $27
million. Yeah, bringing its total gross up to $27 million. Woo. Poor Madea. Dying alone.
It's still a lot of money. I'd be pretty happy dying with $27 million.
Right. How much did it cost to make? Does it say right there?
I don't think it has the budget on here.
No, yeah. It's a secret. I bet it was at least...
$15
million. $15 million. Yeah, well, let's go with that. That's actually probably a pretty good estimate.
I bet you $10 million of it went to Tyler Perry's own salary, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's directing. He wrote it. He's playing Madea. He's doing most of the legwork.
He's like a black Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, couldn't have said it better myself. And then in third place is our favorite battle angel, Alita Battle Angel, whatever. Weekend gross of $7 million, bringing its total gross up to $72
million. What a drop off.
China will have to save this movie.
Okay, hey, I just want to talk a little bit about Alita Battle Angel for a second because it has to do with next week's episode. So I don't know if you follow.
Oh yeah, no, that's so stupid. Yeah, go on.
The alt right on Twitter at all, but how like? So I saw this because I saw someone retweeted like one of James Woods' tweets. Which one? Fuck James Woods. Just fuck everything about James Woods. But he tweeted like, "Oh man, everybody should go see Alita: Battle Angel instead of Captain Marvel this weekend." Like,
why? All right. Why? I like, what is the argument? Like, oh, instead of seeing this like female heroine for one of the biggest franchises in the world, see a separate female heroine from a future franchise. Like, what is the argument there?
They're just that salty about Captain Marvel. They're like, go see a movie where, you know, the producers don't hate half the audience. I'm like, so that's what you're getting from the marketing of Captain Marvel.
Right. I mean, if they really hated half the audience, they wouldn't be making comic book movies, first of all. Second of all, they wouldn't have waited until the 21st entry in the series. It's like, all right, I can take 20 movies for guys, but one for girls? No. Yeah. Like, what are you talking
also,
about?
Also, according to early previews, Sam Jackson is the real star of the movie anyway. So.
And the cat.
And the cat, and Goose the cat, who actually, is Goose a male?
Sure, yeah, no, I thought they said Goose the cat, who is also Goose a male. I'm like, what kind of name is Goose a male?
Goose a male? That's my D&D character's name.
Goose a male, the Khajiit.
Khajiit has wares if you have coin.
Right, man, can't wait for Elder Scrolls 6. We will become a video game podcast as soon as that happens, so...
Oh, yeah.
You can hold me. You know, I just realized that our bets for the Oscars, what did I say? Like, if I think we had different bets and I had things to remind us. And I think neither of them came true.
Well, you can remind us on next week's episode when you have them on hand and ready.
No, I have them on hand right now, actually.
What did we bet?
So we said that during the Oscars that if A Star Is Born wins Best Picture, RIP, Robert has to eat a copy of Burn, starring Bradley Cooper, and I have to stop watching movies forever. So,
Okay, well, I'm actually kind of sad that that prediction didn't come true, because I think that would make for some hot content.
Right, yeah. I like the idea that I wouldn't be able to see movies again. You would just have to describe them to me, and then I would have to say whether I think I would like it or not.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty good at describing films.
So far, so good.
Also, like, you know, that copy of Burnt on DVD looked pretty appetizing.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Was it? I thought it was a book.
I think was a book. It was a book that they turned into a movie that nobody remembers.
Right. Wasn't that the Anthony Bourdain book?
Was it? No, I don't think. I don't think so.
Agreed.
Although it does sound similar to Anthony Bourdain's life. Like the whole, like, he's a great chef, but then he got addicted to heroin.
Yeah, that'll happen. To the best of us.
You gonna comment a little more on heroin users?
No, I'm gonna leave that one alone.
All right,
let's just transition into the highs, the toss ups, and the lows of the week. You know, Robert, I don't even know if you got a chance to look at these, but I think they're pretty good. So the first high,
just hit me with them,
is that Warner Brothers is starting development on an Edge of Tomorrow sequel.
Yeah, I did see this, and is it still technically called Edge of Tomorrow? Because I thought they changed the title, like, after it came out on DVD.
Yeah, did they change it to, like, Edge of Tomorrow, : Live, Die, Repeat, or is it just called Live, Die, Repeat?
Something like that. I don't remember. I don't own it on DVD, so I can't check, but, you know, hang on. I'm going to do a cursory search on IMDb to see if it still comes up Edge of Tomorrow. Okay, so I guess it's still called Edge of Tomorrow. Maybe they undid the rename, because I definitely remember them coming out and saying, hey, this movie's called Live, Die, Repeat now, : Edge of Tomorrow.
It's like, all right, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
What a great movie.
Yeah, Edge of Tomorrow fucking rocks.
Yeah, I'm surprised. That was like my, oh man. Yeah, Tom Cruise, Emily Blunt, a good concept.
Yeah, it's so rare to see, like, I guess it's not technically like an original idea. It's based off of a Japanese light novel of the same, or not of the same. I think, what was the novel? Oh, the novel was called All You Need Is Kill,
which is a hilarious title for anything.
Yeah. But I think, I don't know if there's more source material for them to pull from, or if the sequel is going to be entirely original. So I'm kind of curious to see where they go from here.
What could the sequel even be? That's what I don't know.
I mean, maybe I'd be fine if they just brought it back and made Emily Blunt the main character.
I'd be into that.
Yeah. Give me that Full Metal Bitch movie. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. What? Full Metal Bitch. Yeah.
That's what they called her. Yeah.
The Full Metal Bitch.
You think I was just calling her Full Metal Bitch?
Like, I'm like, what a crazy idea for a movie name that you just pulled out of your ass. And it's like, oh no. Yeah. You remember that movie better than I do.
Yeah. Dude, Edge of Tomorrow is fucking awesome. I love that movie.
Yeah.
I will sing its praises for days.
Yeah. 100%. So that's a high. The toss up, I would say, is the new Hellboy Red Band trailer. So as we all know, this new Hellboy movie is going to be rated R,
mm-hmm.
unlike the previous two movies.
Which didn't even need to be.
Correct. David Harbour is going to be the new Hellboy, and he's uglier this time. Boy, howdy. Yeah. That's the main takeaway. And the first trailer was very underwhelming. I think we both agree on that. And this trailer, it looks better.
It looks a little better, but I think it's still kind of underwhelming. Like, I'm still not sold. And that's the thing. Maybe it's just because this is a Hellboy reboot, and Hellboy 1 and 2 are so good.
Yeah.
That so far, the marketing for this film has not justified its existence to me yet.
Right. I think David Harbour is a good choice for the role.
Yeah.
The character design is a little clunky, but sure, I'll get used to it.
I think
Mila
I'm really
Jovovich,
concerned about yeah
sure.
she's like
she seems
I
fine
mean, she's hot, but like I don't know. her villain, like the villainess angle, and just like the whole, so far what I'm guessing is going to happen from the trailers of the film, seems pretty generic, and like it just doesn't seem, there's not as much personality as in Del Toro's Hellboy films from what I've been seeing so far. Either in like both in like the set design, the character writing, and just the plotting of the film.
The CGI. Like,
Yeah. And like Ian McShane as like their headmaster, you know, I'm there for that.
Yeah. But great casting.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah.
This movie comes out in like a month and a half. So.
Oh, yeah. And they're putting it between like Endgame and another movie.
Good luck.
Yeah. But it's also targeting a very different, you know, we said the same thing with Deadpool. Deadpool 2 was coming out like the weekend before Endgame or something. And it did pretty well. That pretty well.
Good,
it's
though.
like the third best R-rated movie of all time or whatever.
Yeah. So this movie is going to ride entirely on word of mouth because Hellboy's not that powerful of a franchise. Like the fact that it's already been rebooted within the decade it doesn't bode well for like the staying power of this franchise.
Spider-Man would like to have a word with you.
Okay. Yeah. Spider-Man is Marvel.
True. Is Hellboy DC?
Hellboy is Dark Horse.
Oh, okay. Which is that owned by DC now?
I don't believe so. I believe Dark Horse is still independent.
Still indie?
DC owns Vertigo.
Ah.
Yeah, that's their like independent imprint, even though it's not really independent. It's just what they put all their like dark, crazy shit under. But
yeah.
Vertigo comics are fucking awesome. If you want to get into comics, I highly recommend going to check out some Vertigo comics because they're fucking great.
I'll have you send me some titles maybe I can check out.
All right.
Tweet it out and tag me in it and then also text me so I don't forget.
I will.
I think that it'll really, I hope it does well because I want R-rated comic book movies to do well because R-rated action is good and it's fun. I'm an adult. I'm into it. You know, like PG-13 violence really, it feels more offensive than R-rated like gore or like really intense violence, because to me, if you're gonna have violence, you show violence, the stuff where it's like, oh, he shot him and then he dies off, like that's fucked up, like that you're doing that. Show like violence is violence. You can't just be like, oh, he just killed somebody and look, he doesn't feel bad, but like, no, like violence is bad. You got to show us
your
the effects
violence,
of it.
Yeah, let me see the consequences. I want to see your violence matter.
Right, exactly.
I also really just want... God damn, I want fucking Ron Perlman back as Hellboy. He was such perfect casting.
Great casting. Amazing.
Oof. Yeah, so I don't know. This... I have no strong feelings one way or another on this film. I think that the music choices for both these trailers have been kind of odd.
And I think they're trying to appeal to like the lowest common denominator movie goers. They're trying to appeal to 19-year-old boys.
It really makes me wonder like if these trailers are accurately capturing the tone of this movie or if they're just like completely betraying the tone of this film with the marketing. Kind of like what they apparently did with Suicide Squad and how like the Suicide Squad trailer was so well received that they ended up just having the fucking marketing house cut the entire film.
That's a good question. I really hope that it is, because really all you got to do, you got to get the butts in the seats. And that's why I'm very wary with trailers, because the object of the trailer is not to show you what the movie is, how good it's going to be. It's supposed to get people in the seats. That is the only thing it is supposed to do. Because
they're supposed to be tone pieces.
Right. You're supposed to just be shown, hey, go to the theater. You're going to see something you like. And then when you get there, even if it's something different, as long as it's good and not complete misdirection like the Drive trailers, you know, it'll be, people will talk about it.
Yeah. Okay. Quick side tangent. I know this wasn't on the docket, but
how dare
did you see...
How dare you?
Did you see the new Shazam trailer?
Yeah, I did.
How do you feel about that?
I'm still like Zachary Levi?
Yeah. Levi. I think it's Zachary Levi, not Zachary Quinto.
Yeah, sure. We can debate that later. it seems good. I don't know. I'm just so... I don't know what to make of DC's strategy now.
they're pivoting pretty hard,
right?
Between Aquaman and Shazam, and whatever
one feels
the
like
James
an
Gunn
movie.
Suicide Squad.
Yeah, this feels like Ant-Man kind of with the vibe that they're going for, and I'm kind of, I just don't know. It feels like someone's taking you somewhere. Like, it's like, all right, we're going to McDonald's, and then you end up at Burger King, and you're like, this is, like, kind of the same, but not really. Like, where are we going? What other lies have you told me?
This is basically the same. I feel like that's more akin to, like, someone promising to take you to, like it, you know, comparisons. If I need to equate Zack Snyder's initial vision for the DC franchise and compared to where DC or where Warner Brothers is taking it now, I feel like it's more akin to someone promising to take you to, like,
jail?
That's really good. Yeah.
Taking you to, like,
I guess I'm actually, I didn't really think this through because I'm not too culinarily minded. Right. I can't really think of, like, awesome restaurants off the top of my head.
I feel like we need almost a palate cleanser. Like, I'm getting such a, like, a weird whiplash with, like, oh, what, Shazam? This is a DC movie? Because it's still even got a little bit of the vibe of Man of Steel.
I mean, I feel like Aquaman was kind of the DC palate cleanser. Like, Aquaman essentially, I feel like, wiped the Snyder tone completely off the map for DC's universe. Because Aquaman is such stupid bullshit insanity. And it's not trying to be. It doesn't, like, Aquaman does not have
which
a
there's
view.
No stupid bullshit fantasy in the Snyder films.
The Snyder films at least had, like, you could argue that the Snyder films had a worldview and philosophy behind them.
Definitely. I would. Okay. Yes.
But, like, Aquaman does not. Nothing even close. Aquaman is pure popcorn entertainment. And it's fun. It's super fun. I like Aquaman a lot. I think it was well made. I think it was hilariously over the top. But I still miss the Snyderverse.
Yeah, I guess it's just because Jason Momoa was in Justice League, and so I'm getting that weird, like, all right, this was a cool little one-off, but you're still coming back to this shared universe that's weird, right? And it's like, yeah, but watch Shazam. I'm like, this is totally the opposite direction still. And
that's,
maybe
I think
the next movie after Shazam, I haven't even seen Shazam, but maybe the movie after this, I'll be like, okay, I get where we are now.
I'm actually kind of sad that Snyder is just out of the picture completely now, because I almost feel like Shazam could have been a super interesting counterpoint to everything that was going on in Zack Snyder's, like, grim, dark universe. Because, like, Superman and Batman exist in the Shazam world. Like, there are clearly references to the Snyderverse Batman and Superman heroes. And I think it'd be super fun to have that type of, like, silly childhood innocence interact with, like, these dark heroes to have Billy Batson go up to Superman and be like, hey man, we have, like, the same powers, but what the fuck is brooding? Like, what are you brooding about?
Yeah,
like,
why are you
shit,
so
this
sad?
Shit is this is awesome. Like, I love being able to shoot lightning out of my hands and fly at the speed of, like, a bullet. But I guess we're just not going to see that, because I'm assuming whoever takes over. I guess they kind of did it with Justice League when they had Joss Whedon come in and essentially try to write the team as the Avengers.
I wonder, I mean, we still have 7 Joker movies in development right now. Like, so I just think that it's becoming so madcap. Just somebody at Warner Brothers hopefully has lost their job, because this is not Zack Snyder's fault. Yeah, but he's not. It's not his fault. This is some producer level like bullshit. Like,
oh yeah, this is someone trying to backtrack on the promises that they initially made with the creative side of their team because of some, like, you know, marketing feedback. Some goddamn audience test screener started saying, like, oh, I don't want to have a movie over 2 hours. So they're like, all right, 2-hour hard cap on Justice League.
Meanwhile, Civil War is like, we'll have 3-hour long movies. Like, Endgame is going to be 3 hours. So
Endgame is, it's going to be pretty much 3 hours.
It's going to be the Lord of the Rings, Return of the King of movies called Avengers Endgame.
So, okay, you know what I would love to see? Now that we've seen James Gunn get burned by Disney and go over to DC, I want to see Zack Snyder direct a Marvel movie at some point.
I believe that could happen. I am definitely... Well, no, I don't believe that's going to happen. I think he's done.
I would rather see him direct a Star Wars film, but still, just I want to see Zack Snyder go over to Disney.
I think I've had enough of Zack Snyder in my life for a while.
Hey, man, he's directing that. He's got his Netflix original film, which sounds pretty cool. But I cannot wait to see his adaptation of The Fountainhead. That's going to be wild.
Yeah, that's what he should just do, high level Ayn Rand bullshit. That's what it's just do that and then do a remake of the Atlas Shrugged franchise.
Here's my 6-hour cut of Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah, enjoy it, all you libs. And that's libertarians, not liberals.
Starring Bill Maher.
Starring Bill Maher. Yeah. Oh, God. That sounds awful.
It's like Bill Maher in a Naughty Professor situation. Bill Maher's playing every character.
Please stop. All right. Well, let's move on from that. Let's get into the low, which is the thoroughly disappointing Dark Phoenix trailer. And yeah. I just showed Robert the international trailer, which is significantly better.
I do think the international trailer is better, but here, what I was going to say after I finished watching that trailer, they completely fuck up the Phoenix Force.
How so?
So the Phoenix Force is one. The Phoenix Force is a multiversal entity, and it is essentially the combination of the life force of every living being in the multiverse. But in this,
baller.
In this, yeah, fucking cool, right?
Yeah.
But in this
sick,
movie,
dude.
They're just like as we still don't know who Jessica Chastain's character is. I'm assuming that she's strictly there for like expository purposes.
She is the multiverse.
Yeah. She is Stan Lee.
Right.
But in this movie, they're just like, yeah, it's this like terrifying cosmic wave that's just destroyed everything it's touched until it touched you. I'm like, that's not how that shit works.
Right.
But
I mean,
that's also
I don't know.
Just me being like familiar with the comic lore. So I don't know if like that's really going to have any bearing on the film whatsoever. But to me, it still looks like a remake of The Last Stand.
Yeah, I mean, they did definitely rework the trailer that everybody has seen, the U.S. trailer. It looks like it's a shot for shot remake of X-Men Last Stand, which is arguably the worst movie ever made. no.
Thanks, Brett Ratner.
Yeah, thanks, Brett Ratner. It is kind of crazy, like just for a moment that Brett Ratner and Bryan Singer were both involved in the X-Men universe.
Wait, why was Brett Ratner accused of shit too?
Yeah, he was doing bad stuff. He was like, you know, like yelling at Ellen Page and stuff. Like, there's a whole lot of issues.
What?
Yeah, look at
that.
Damn,
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, why
Best
do you
thing
think
I heard
he
about Brett Ratner was that he directed that Dwayne Johnson Hercules film?
You mean Tower Heist?
Yeah.
I think you're talking about Tower Heist. Sorry,
Eddie
Murphy and
Star Vehicle, yeah.
Yeah, Ben Stiller, I think.
Yep, that was Ben Stiller.
Yeah, cool. Well, Brett Ratner is the Spielberg of our time. That's all I know. but overall, yeah, I'm not still very like apprehensive about this Dark Phoenix movie. And I am a big fan of the X-Men movie, so I don't know. I'm upset.
Dude, I just don't know how the fucking studio was able to take a franchise as colorful, as extravagant, and flamboyant as the X-Men and turn it into, like, arguably the most boring comic book adaptation in the modern cinematic landscape. How did they do that? Is that Bryan Singer's fault?
No, okay. Well, I think the first two X-Men movies were instrumental in making comic book movies allowing people to take them seriously.
But I disagree. Like, I think Spider-Man 2 did that.
When did Spider-Man 2 come out?
2004?
When did X-Men 2 come out?
X-2?
2003. Okay, so back to what I was saying. I think you could argue that the reason that people were able to accept a more serious Spider-Man Spider-Man 2 was because the X-Men laid out a very, because the first X-Men is, there's like a decent amount of like body horror in it, and it takes itself pretty reasonably seriously. It opens with a sequence during the Holocaust.
Yeah, like, no, X-1 and 2 are like super self-serious. It's actually kind of funny to go back and watch those movies today, especially with like, you know, Marvel's current sensibility,
uh-huh.
And how seriously those movies took themselves. And like, I still think it works, because that scene when you're introduced to Wolverine and you've got that gross ass like close up of the claw coming out of his knuckles.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, so that's the point of this movie. So like, these mutations are like scary to the people that they happen to.
Yeah. Does it hurt every time?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of stuff going on. And so my point is that I don't think it's necessarily boring. I think it really drove, I think that after a while, it couldn't figure out where it fit in the landscape after X3 completely like flopped, and then X-Men Origins Wolverine was just like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
it has
yeah.
really been through the ringer of figuring out itself as a franchise. And I don't think any other franchise, maybe like the Spider-Man series really is the only other one that's like, dude, figure your stuff out. Like, what are you doing?
Dude, Fast and the Furious. They figured that shit out. It only took them 5 movies.
Right, exactly.
So the X1 and 2, I still think are great. I'm not saying that those movies are boring, but I'm saying like the current state of the X-Men franchise and film is, it puts me to sleep. And like not yes. the spin-off. I think the spin-offs are super successful. Like, I think Logan is fucking great.
One of the best comic movies fantastic. Of all time. Yeah. Deadpool. Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I was looking forward to the New Mutants, because it was barely branding itself as an X-Men film. It was just like, it felt like it was going back to that body horror style
definitely
of the first films. And I think you could even argue that Fantastic from 2015 initially wanted to do that.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's how they stylized it. But that movie, like the first 20 minutes after they get their powers, it feels like a body horror. It almost feels like a David Cronenberg film.
Right.
And then I don't know what happened. Apparently, you know, there were some studio nightmares behind the production of that film. But I feel like that is a film that had potential and had a vision initially that got fucked into the ground. And I think that it's evident when you watch the film.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I really think I do think that the MCU has kind of screwed everything up. In a way that it's become so successful that it's impossible to make movies that are supposed to be franchises.
It's without, the standard that people hold comic book franchises up to now.
Exactly. And when people say like, oh, I want, like, once they see all these movies breaking a billion, they're no longer satisfied with something that maybe is just going to make 500 million, which that's still a lot of money. That's like,
it's a shit ton of money.
Yeah. The first X-Men movie made $407 million. And it was a success story. It spawned a franchise, and it made what, like 4 times its budget? Not even.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we need to get back to an area where filmmakers can experiment and do things that are not cushy like Marvel movies.
I don't think we're gonna see that with mainstream comic book characters anymore, though. Like, I think we're gonna have to start seeing adaptations of these like more independent like Image Comics or Dark Horse Comics to really get that, to capture that feeling again, that like transgressive feeling that the X-Men and like Spider-Man originally gave us before these things became like mainstream staples of media. But yeah, I don't know. I really wonder what's going to happen now that Disney owns the rights to the X-Men, and that presumably they're going to be rolled into the MCU pretty soon here.
I'm interested to see, but boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
we'll see.
Hellboy is the answer, apparently. That's what I'm getting from Robert. All right. Well, enough just talking about comic book movies forever, because we could do a whole podcast on just comic book movies and it would be 6 hours long.
Oh,
and nobody would listen to it. Yeah.
Tune in next week for Captain Marvel.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. We'll go through the whole thing of Miss Marvel, Captain Marvel, Shazam. It's all the same to me.
Yeah. It's so weird that we're getting two Captain Marvel adaptations this close to each other.
Right. When did they change his name to Shazam? Or has it never been Shazam in the comics?
His name is technically not Shazam. That's just what his line has, like his comic book line has been called so far. And it actually kind of, I don't know if we really want to get into this right now.
I don't know if I do, but go try and summarize it as best as you can.
All right. So the quick summary is that Captain Marvel initially was not a DC character. It was being written by a rival of DC at the time, back in the 1940s. And I forget what the publisher name was, but DC eventually said, they put their foot down. They said, fuck it, stop publishing this because you're infringing on like our Superman copyright. And they didn't. So DC won a lawsuit and eventually took control of all of their properties. And so they eventually just rolled Captain Marvel into the DC like universe.
Detective Comics strikes again.
And this was also around the same time that Marvel and DC were working together, like before Marvel had separated from DC and become its own comic book brand.
Interesting.
So Marvel actually took the name Captain Marvel, and it's not like Carol Danvers is not the original Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel was very similar to Shazam, but in like Marvel's Marvel's comic book universe. And I forget what his, his name. So he was an alien named Mar-Vell. And he also just happened to be called Captain Marvel because he was a captain of like the alien force he commanded.
Cool.
And then this whole thing happened, and there's this girl named Miss Marvel who is Carol Danvers. And there's this whole comic book arc that happened like in the mid 2000s where she was initially just like a sex object to sell comic books to teenage boys. But she has like this crisis of character, and eventually she's like found by the alien race, the Kree, and is given like these superpowers and a new uniform and everything. Be like, hey, you're not a sex object anymore. You're the new Captain Marvel. So there you go. That's a quick summary of how we get Brie Larson as Captain Marvel, and Shazam, who is also technically Captain Marvel, but not, because I guess Marvel has the more powerful brand recognition at this point.
That's a good soundbite. That's a good that's a good explanation of it. Now I feel like I've learned more than any amount of Wikipedia articles could have told me.
Yeah, I'm going to start doing YouTube video essays pretty soon here.
Oh God, just as long as you set them to Sabotage, that's all I care about. All right, now that we've talked about the news, speaking of Sabotage, let's get into our review of the week, which is the new Steven Soderbergh. You might know him from the Ocean series and my personal favorite, Traffic, Aaron Brockovich, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, as a new Netflix movie shot entirely on the iPhone 8 about the NBA. It's more specifically the players. It's called Half-Flying Bird.
It's called Half-Flying Bird. Dan, what is this movie about?
This movie is about a NBA lockout and the agent whose name is Ray Burke. And it's played by Andre Holland, who you might remember if you ever watched Soderbergh's TV show on Cinemax called The Nick. He plays the French doctor. It's a great show. I would really recommend it. He's also in Moonlight. It also stars Zazie Beetz as Sam, his ex-assistant. Whoa. Melvin Gregg is Eric Scott, the rookie that Ray Burke is representing. And then Zachary Quinto is his boss. Sanja Sohn is the representative for the Players Association. And Kyle MacLachlan, who is the representative for the coaches in this whole lockout.
Shout out to Kyle MacLachlan. He's in pretty good shape for his age.
He is, yeah. If you watched the new Twin Peaks, The Return, there's one scene where he's just like shirtless. And it's like, oh, this guy's ripped for a 60-year-old guy.
Okay, this has nothing to do with the review. But I need to ask you this.
Yes.
Do I need to watch the original Twin Peaks series to watch Twin Peaks: The Return?
Yes.
Do I need Do I need to watch Fire Walk With Me?
Yes. Next question.
Fuck. Okay. Well, those are all my questions.
Yeah, it's okay. The first season is only like 10 episodes. It'll be fine. Yeah. The second season is 50. A bit of a slog. It's 24, but whatever. So let's get into this. It's a Netflix original movie. It is written by the co-writer of Moonlight, and it tackles some pretty interesting stories. So basically what's happening is that there's a lockout, and the main character, Ray Burke, is representing a rookie who has not started yet, has not gotten paid yet. He he can't work pretty much. And everything's on the line just because no one's playing. The sports agency, nobody can get paid. Everything's frozen. So it's up to Ray Burke to figure this out. And what follows is a very interesting political examination of the power dynamics of the NBA, told with literally no basketball involved. It is purely a story-driven drama. It's only 90 minutes long as well. And let's talk about the things that worked and what didn't work. I think, first of all, one of the things that does work is the acting is very on par, very good. very deliberate. This is a Soderbergh movie, so people are delivering information very quickly, very smartly, and it's a lot of exposition hidden as conversations.
Yeah, it almost felt Sorkin-esque in its dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that is one of the most surprising aspects about this film to me is like I don't think I'd even seen a trailer for this film before going into it. So all I knew
Neither
was that
I.
It was like I just heard and from the description that it was like it was a basketball drama.
Right.
And I was really kind of expecting, if anything, more of like Moneyball for basketball.
Right.
But I don't think you could describe I don't think that's a very apt description of this film. I think this and Moneyball are two very different films. And I think that's because this movie does delve into the power dynamics of the how does he put it? The game above the game. It's not the metagame of basketball, essentially. Like
exactly. And it does tackle race a lot. It's pretty much an all black cast. I think the only white actor is Kyle MacLachlan.
And Zachary Quinto.
Yes. So what's interesting is that the cinematography is all done. You know, this is a Soderbergh movie. It's the cinematography is by him. He's working the camera, which is three iPhone 8s with different lenses on them. It's all made by this company called Modular. Different
rigs. A lot
of
wide angles in this movie.
It's all wide angles, baby.
Yeah.
A lot of tracking shots. Not actually. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of tripod. A lot of pivoting. You can tell this was shot on. The way that he moves the camera. You can tell that he is pretty much focused on not smoothly moving the camera that much.
Yeah.
Like a lot of stationary shots, a lot of pans.
Yeah. I feel like it does add a dynamism to the film, which I think could have been like, and maybe that's why I think I liked this film probably a little bit more than Moneyball, is just the cinematic language of this film, I think, was a lot more engrossing than Moneyball.
I can agree with that. I love Moneyball, and I think it's my favorite Sorkin script, and the acting is amazing.
Which is still why I need to go back and watch Moneyball again, because you're singing its praises so much, and I was not that big of a fan. But that's to me immediately why I think this film stuck out to me a little bit more. And also, I think I was just surprised at how striking visually this film was.
Yeah,
especially considering that it was shot on an iPhone 8. And I think the fact that this is like we were talking about it a little earlier, but it to me, this film feels like a grand story being told on an extremely small scale. But there are moments in the film that feel epic. And the fact that it's shot on an iPhone, I think, is just even more impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it really just shows that, you know, Soderbergh is a master innovator, always doing the new technology. He was one of the first filmmakers to go all digital. Is very interested in just the way movies are made. This is his second movie filmed on an iPhone, the first being Unsane, starring Claire Foy, which was, you know, you can, I think, watch that on Amazon Prime now. I think it was sold to Amazon.
Did you see it?
I did not, but that's filmed on an iPhone 7. And I think from what I've read, the difference is palpable from 7 to 8.
Really? And so this is just actually a great commercial for the iPhone.
Yeah, I mean, it is. He's filming it on, I think it's, there's three separate iPhones, but I think it is the phone that he's using. You know, I have an iPhone 8. And so what's crazy to me is seeing this movie and looking like, oh, wow, this is, and obviously there's stuff being done in post, but the movie looks good. And if no one told you, hey, if someone just said this is an indie film, and then at the end, they'd be like, hey, this was all filmed on an iPhone. You'd be like, wait, what? Like, really? Yeah.
You'd be like, all right, where's Steve Jobs?
Right.
When does the keynote start? Like,
right. Where's the turtleneck? Show me the New Balance.
Oh, man. Yeah. So I think the consensus is visuals in this movie are great and are made even more impressive by the fact that it was all shot with an iPhone.
Yeah.
But I think so. My biggest problem for me is that I loved the dialogue in this film, and it's very fast paced. Like you were saying, it's only 90 minutes long. But there were definitely moments in the film where I was having trouble following what exactly was happening. And maybe it's just because I wasn't paying enough attention to the dialogue itself and was expecting like a little bit more visual storytelling. But there are moments in this film that have like apparently a lot of weight behind them, and they happen. And I was kind of like, taken aback, was like, oh, I didn't realize that was that important.
Yeah, there is definitely some things that are things move very, very fast. And with this movie, I think we're talking that there's probably about 10 minutes of B-roll. So you're getting like 80 minutes of content to tell an entire movie story. And within that, it's a lot of acting, obviously. But the story is delivered very quickly through dialogue. And if you miss like a beat, you miss like a big part of the plot. I know that there's a plot about Ray Burke's brother that I kind of glossed over and didn't, I couldn't really grab onto exactly what was happening there, but I could tell it was emotionally relevant. And sometimes just details were glossed over, not so much glossed over, but they're mentioned once. And then it's kind of like, I hope you heard that because it's going to be referenced later. And like also very briefly. So
yeah,
I think one of the issues might be is that because it's all filmed on an iPhone, that the audio was a little muffled at some times, that I wasn't able to understand exactly what was going on. It could have also been that the fact that this was filmed on like a budget of $2 million, which is nothing, especially for an A-list director like Soderbergh.
Right, with a production studio like Netflix behind it.
Yeah, exactly. This is probably a slam dunk. It's probably already made its value back. Yep, you're right. I agree. And it also it had its world premiere at Slamdance Film Festival.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Which is half a good pun.
Yeah, it's like an offshoot of Sundance that happens during Sundance, but for like really indie stuff.
Oh, okay.
So this is like one of the first like really high profile movies to premiere at Slamdance.
I guess it's Soderbergh doing that. Good for Soderbergh.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think as far as the acting goes, performances are all really, really good. The production, I mean, there's not a whole lot going. That's like the hard. It's hard to talk about this movie other than what I would say is like it's a very low investment to watch it. And it's such an interesting experiment in what movie making is. And it's really, this is actually, I think, the perfect Netflix original. Like an art house movie made for like no money that would not get, I probably wouldn't have seen this in the theaters otherwise. And I love Soderbergh. Oh, yeah. I would have waited till it came out on Netflix or Amazon.
Exactly. So, yeah. Like I didn't see Unsane in theaters, but I love Soderbergh too. I didn't see Logan Lucky in theaters, but I'll watch all of Soderbergh's
Amazon
films.
Prime right now. So you should go check that out because it's really good.
Yeah. I've seen it now and I agree. You should go check it out because it is really good. Yeah, I feel like this, honestly, I hope that Soderbergh continues to work with Netflix because I think the types of films that it seems like he wants to make in the future are these like small indie darlings. But the fact that Netflix is the producer and that there's like like the biggest platform in America that is immediately accessible to hundreds of people that wouldn't have otherwise seen a film like this is super cool.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, this is not like the best movie I've ever seen. It's, you know, probably a solid like 3.5 stars, but you know, the fact that you can see it, if you have Netflix, you can see it for free. Even if you're not interested in basketball, I think it raises a lot of very interesting points and starts a dialogue about what ownership means in the athletic world. I think it's a very interesting, area to explore with film.
Yeah.
And it's something that Soderbergh does very deftly for a script that has nothing to do with him, you know?
Yeah. And like, cause Soderbergh, this is his first sports film too, right?
That is a good question.
I believe it is. I'm pretty confident in saying that. But it's even weird to me calling this movie a sports film because I think at the core of this film is this is a movie about power dynamics.
Yes.
So I think you could swap out any sport. Well, not any sport, but like you could swap probably football into the mix and it would be a very similar story. I guess football and basketball are the only two like really African-American dominated sports. Cause I was going to say like, you can't really do it with soccer. Cause I feel like soccer is pretty white, at least what I know about soccer.
No, I think, yeah, it's pretty Hispanic. Yeah. The Brazilians love it.
White. I just think of David Beckham.
Right. Yeah. So I think that it is probably his only sports movie. But it just shows how, you know, he's willing to tackle anything. And this is, you know, this might almost be more of a recommendation for like film fans, people who are fans of how things are made and for prestige directors.
Mm-hmm.
But for the average, I think it's a very accessible movie. You know, everyone knows about the NBA. It's a big story. And I think it tells its story pretty concretely, as much as I lost some details in the mix. But yeah, this is really,
I think by the end, you understand what happens and like what the message of the movie was.
Exactly. Yeah. I think overall, I liked it. I wouldn't say I like really, really liked it, but it was a good, you know, instead of watching two episodes of some shitty Netflix hour long series, watch this and get your half an hour back.
Yeah, man. I just noticed this too, looking at the poster. And it makes sense now, but when I going into this movie, I did not expect it to be, I thought it was going to be entirely about the rookie and him struggling, like in the middle of the lockout, not getting paid, and like him contending with like, oh, what is ownership? Like, what does it mean to belong to a team like this? I'm like, this isn't, that's not this movie at all. Like, this is all about his representative, his agent. Right.
Yes. And 100% about the agent.
Yeah. Which is super cool. I just noticed on the poster too, that it's, so the poster is a silhouette of a dude throwing a basketball up into the air. And I just noticed too that there's a tie on him. I didn't realize that at first. So I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. That I understand why he's the main character of the movie now. The movie was telling it to me all along.
Very clever, yeah.
I always thought this marketing was just lying to me.
Yeah, the old switcheroo. So, you know, I don't really have too many other thoughts on this, although I think you have Netflix. There is one of the best directors alive, in my opinion, has given you a movie, pretty much. Watch it.
Yeah. He put effort into it. He shot it on his phone. You know, he was probably just walking through New York one day. He was like, oh, let's make a movie.
Yeah, really. I mean, it's got New York is almost a little bit of a character in it. There's a lot of New York scenes, but it's not over like excessively New York. It's different because this movie could have very easily been shot in L.A. and been about the Lakers and not the Knicks.
Easily. I do really like, too, that, again, this movie's all about power structures, and there's a surprising amount, I think, of racial commentary in it.
Yes.
But I love that one basketball coach who has the rule of, like, no slavery references on my court.
Right. Unless you have to say the magic phrase.
Right, yeah.
Or whatever, yeah. It's, I love God and all his black people. Yeah, it's great performances all around. Good work from Soderbergh. I don't have anything else to say, really. What about you, Rob? Any final thoughts?
No, I would. It gets my recommendation, and this is coming from someone who doesn't care about basketball at all.
Oh yeah, perfect. All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. High Flying Bird. Check it out on Netflix. It is streaming now.
Yeah, we don't have to give a recommendation of go see it in the theaters. You don't have to. It's right there.
Go
waiting
take
for you.
Your ex-girlfriend's Netflix account that I know you have still on your Roku and watch this movie, you cheap fuck. God. All right. I'm gonna get this. Get our next movie. It's gonna be Captain Marvel. We already talked about it. You know what it is, people. We're gonna see it with you. Get the review embargo has been lifted, but don't look at any reviews because you don't trust them. Trust us.
Yeah, we're the only movie podcast. Everyone else is just fucking pretenders.
Yeah, everyone else just words. You hate rating. I know you.
Yeah, that's why you listen to podcasts. To
yeah. Why read when people could read to you? Come on. Come on.
Yeah. We're just like literature for your ears, man.
That'd be a good tagline for the podcast going forward. Viewing angles like literature for your ears.
I'll make some merch.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, this is Viewing Angles. You know how to find us. We're viewingangles.podcast.com. Check out all of our shit. Great merch in the store. Buy it.
Yeah.
Please. And if you have any complaints, you know where to send them. To Brian Williams, care of MSNBC. God damn it. You know how to follow me at the Dan Leo Show for Twitter, Letterboxd, D Leo. And don't even try and friend me on Facebook. I don't want it. I don't want that. Robert, how do the people get in touch with you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram and Letterboxd at Robert Jr. JR. Good luck finding my Facebook.
Hell yeah. Well, all right. Until next week, nuts. Something is so funny. It's so funny.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for voting to be called nuts. It brings us great joy.
We give the people what they want.
Yeah, exactly.
And you have the right to be called whatever you want.
Yeah, we're here for you. But this is a democracy. Y'all motherfuckers voted for nuts.
Nuts. Y'all motherfuckers nuts. Well, all right. Until next week.
Nuts. Bye.